Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by Canes Tire in San Rafael. Canes Tire has always had the lowest prices in Marin for 54 years. Today's guest is Amy Gutierrez, Giants reporter for Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area, and really known as Amy G, but you know, we never hear that name. We never hear Gutierrez, but Amy G joining us here on the Giants podcast. And Amy, this is a day where I don't know how many Giants fans are really thinking too much about the six-game losing streak and what happened in L.A. because we're thinking about Tim Lincecum and how he just had surgery and what the future is for him. And what are your thoughts about this day as Lincecum just underwent the surgery?
I think you're right. I think Tim Lincecum's definitely in the forefront right now. You know, the Bay Area has such a love affair with Timmy, and it was heavy news to hear that yesterday for fans, for sure. You knew what was going on was fairly severe. I mean, he wasn't even out throwing bullpens. But I was actually surprised yesterday because word came down that he would probably have surgery, and the next thing I saw, he had already had it. So they had clearly made a decision probably a while ago that this was indeed a case where surgery was needed. I think, though, with the reflection from Bruce Bochy yesterday and talking about Timmy, the Giants just feel that this season is over, and they definitely are open to giving him a shot to rehab and come back. I think that the relationship between Tim Lincecum and the Giants is very positive. And I think you'll see that play out. And Timmy's a grinder. He's a fighter. And we've seen that through his whole career. And unless he has decided to hang up the cleats, then I think he'll have an opportunity to come back and play the sport that he loves.
You know, I was thinking it's funny because the chances of him coming back to the Giants might be better now that he had the surgery than if he didn't, because he might have been more attractive to teams, let's say, if he had pitched through the rest of the year. And he wasn't having a great year, but some teams might have taken a chance on him and maybe he wouldn't be a Giant. But, you know, now maybe the Giants are the team that gives him a chance. You know, obviously they have the great relationship with him. What do you think? Right. That maybe the odds are maybe more in the favor of the Giants here?
I think that is true, based on the fact that the Giants have all the information. You know, the other teams didn't. When it came out that Tim had degenerative hip issues, you know, anybody who is anybody says that sounds pretty serious. You don't have to be a doctor to realize that, you know, when you're dealing with a hip and a pitcher, you're going to have some trouble. And then Timmy's mechanics and delivery are so convoluted that if anything is ever out of whack, you know, he always had a hard time getting back on track when one little part of his windup came out of sync.
Right.
So the Giants have all the information, and now they also have the financial advantage on their side because the information is out about Timmy that, for lack of a better term, he could be damaged goods, but they know exactly what he's capable of and what he's undergone, and they can watch him through a rehab. And I kind of felt that Timmy's chances to go to another team after this year were slim to none when degenerative hip issues came out into the press. I'm not sure who's going to take a chance on him unless they sign him, you know, at a very low contract or a minimum and have him come into camp, you know, as for a tryout and take a look at him. And that could be where the Giants go. They'll say, well, all right, we'll sign you for $1 million, see what you can do. And they hold the cards. So I do think there's a very good chance that he could stay with the Giants.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with him that he's kind of been fighting against the odds throughout his career. I mean, that's why he was the freak. I mean, I know he was a first-round draft pick, but, you know, he's a shorter guy, and he never hurt his arm.
Yeah.
He never iced his arm. He was just he had the unusual delivery. So he's kind of fought against people his entire life, and then he put up the credentials, of course, two no-hitters, two Cy Young Awards, three world championships. But does that kind of fit into his mentality? You know, I'm always going to be a fighter.
I think that's just who he is by nature. I think Sergio Romo fits into that category as well as not having your stereotypical pitcher's stature. I mean, you know, I think they might be 5'10"-ish. I'm right around the same height as both of them. I think I might weigh more than both of them too. We don't have to get into that though, Joe. But yeah, they're a slight, a slighter figure on the mound.
Right.
And so everything is determined upon the movement on their ball and what they can do with that ball. And I think Tim was just this phenomenon when he came up because everything was moving every which way, and then his ball moved too. And as he went further into his career, then, you know, batters and scouts are able to figure him out. And I'm not sure he was able to make the adjustments needed because you had to tweak so many parts. His delivery was anything but simple. So he certainly found a path throughout different seasons where he was effective and made changes and made adjustments that produced wins. And, you know, he could produce coming out of the bullpen. We saw it in the postseason. And this season, he actually started off doing pretty well. But when you're battling either a painful issue or a trigger issue in your body that won't allow you to function at your full capacity, then you got to take a step back and reevaluate and figure out what it is you want to do.
That kind of sounds like Matt Cain a little bit. I mean, Matt Cain this year, you know, he came in and he was going to be counted on to be maybe a 2 or 3 starter in the rotation. He was out for a long time. There have been so many injuries to talk about on this team, but, you know, Matt Cain's really is a big one, and then he just wasn't able to be the same Matt Cain. Do you think we'll ever see that Matt Cain? What do you think about the way he's trying to get back to, you know, being to where he was?
Here's my thought on Matt Cain. I've never said this publicly, so these are purely my personal thoughts on that. And I've covered him since 2008. I think Matt Cain's issue is mental at this point. I think he's physically capable of delivering the same type of performances he was before he was injury laden. I think he had never experienced an injury. He had never even been on the disabled list for most of his career until he got hit in the elbow and had to go on the DL. But so when you go that long and you're this pillar of strength, you know, mortality is not in your vocabulary. And I kind of think, you know, he was drafted out of high school. This is what he knew. And then his world gets totally turned upside down. And I think his struggles to find his way on the mound are in his head. I do think he's learning how to throw differently based on the surgeries that he's had. I mean, he also had ankle surgery too. So let's not forget, this isn't just in his arm. He had to have bone chips removed out of his ankle. So everything's affected. And I'm sure there is certainly a time period where you're adjusting physically to where, you know, your arm slot has to go and where the snap has to go on the ball. And it feels differently on your elbow than it did before. I think we're well past that with Matt, because he has innings that he looks exactly like he used to, and he's totally locked in. And then there's one inning that gets out of control. And I think once that happens, that first or second home run that's hit off him or the bases get loaded, I think mentally he's breaking down. And that's what he has to fight through. And Matt's tough. You know, he's a stubborn, stubborn guy. I mean, he never shows emotion. Even in the perfect game, he didn't show emotion until he actually finished the game. You know, I was like, come on, crack a smile, something. Something good is happening here, which bodes in his favor. I mean, Matt is so mentally tough, you know, in this sport that it's helped him throughout his career. But I think right now it might actually be getting in the way. I think he needs to give himself a break. I think you need to realize that you're a different person now. You're older now. You've been pitching for a long time, and you're going to have to make some adjustments to lengthen your career. And, you know, you look at a Tim Hudson, you look at a Ryan Vogelsong, they've all gone through it and all fought it mentally, that you're turning the page to the veteran side of things. You know, Matt was he's the longest tenured Giant on the team, but he was a seasoned vet at like 25 years old, you know? So now he's older than that, and you really got to you have to accept what your body's going to do to you, and then you have to mentally overcome it and just become almost a smarter player instead of an instinctual player. Because the instincts go away as you get older, and you have to become wiser. You know, how am I going to outsmart this batter now instead of just throw what I know and be the horse? So it's purely my opinion. I've actually never had a conversation with Matt about the mental side of it. But I'm curious if that is part of the issue of what's going on with him, because I think physically he's okay.
We'll have more with Giants reporter for Comcast SportsNet Bay Area, Amy Gutierrez, right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark McLennan at Kane's Tire in Santa Fe. If you want the lowest prices in Marin and the best service, call us at 453-2942. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street, where our prices beat Costco's prices every time.
When you look at this team, Amy, and you know it's going to be really tough for them to make the postseason the way it is right now after that Dodgers series, but you know it's very difficult to overcome the injuries that they've had. I mean, Hunter Pence being out and Joe Panik and so many players being out for a long stretch of time. But how amazing is it that they actually did stay in the race? And what does it say about players like Buster Posey, who really has, you know, at times carried this offense, and Madison Bumgarner, who certainly has carried the pitching staff as far as the rotation?
Yeah, these guys are incredibly resilient. To be in a postseason race in September is a successful season in and of itself. The problem with the Giants, I think, is yes, they've been hit with a rash of injury, but not so much that as much as the timing of when the injuries came. You know, you're losing Panik and Pence. Now Crawford is back, you know, up and down with the oblique and the shin. You're losing key players at a crucial time when you just don't have the amount of games to get them back and get them at a level that they need to be at to help the team win. So That's the biggest thing, is just the clock is running out for this team. It's not that they're not trying. It's not, I mean, you know, I feel badly for Adrianza. I mean, I'm watching this game. This poor kid cannot get a hit. But the amount of pressure he's under at this time, I mean, you cannot grip harder than they're gripping right now. And to tell him, hey, relax, have fun, play the game, that's not where they're at right now. And you're seeing it, you know, come out in the results of the game that they're losing, and they just can't get that big hit, or they just can't get, you know, out of that inning or whatever it is that's looming over them. And I just think the timing of the injuries is the biggest detriment to this club this season. I'm not saying that it's over, because there are still games mathematically they're in this, and a lot can shift in a road trip or a homestand. So there's still hope, and as long as there's still hope, then I think that's what these guys hold on to and say, you know, look, you know, the Cubs have to face the Pirates and the Cardinals, and we get the Dodgers again, and a lot can turn around. I just don't know if there's enough time for it to.
One thing you look at in recent years with the success of the Giants, they brought in players from the outside, like the Cody Rosses of the world or Marco Scudero, and those guys were veteran players, and they really fit in well. But you know what really surprises me, Amy, and maybe you can touch on how this happens. These young players, like a Matt Duffy, who just kind of stepped in at third base last year, Joe Panik, and, you know, in the beginning of this year when he was playing great, and Kelby Tomlinson now, they just look so composed at the plate. Nothing really phases them, and they're new to this. How do they handle it? Where do we give the credit?
Well, and I actually have asked all of those guys that same question in post-game interviews, because at one point or another, all of them have come up with, you know, game heroics to get the post-game interview. And
nice.
They have all accredited their maturity at this level to the minor league system, to the Giants organization, and the way that they were prepared from day one and moving up through the ranks, who their instructors were, how they were treated, how they were expected to behave. And you really kind of see almost a cookie cutter player out of Joe Panik, Andrew Susak, Matt Duffy, Kelby Tomlinson in their approach and in their behavior. They are calm. They're a little bit wise beyond their years. They're not afraid. They're aggressive. They all play different positions, but they have the same demeanor. And they have all credited the Giants organization in the minors to preparing them well for the big leagues.
You're right, too, about the cookie cutter. I mean, a lot of the hitters seem to have the same approach as Buster Posey. Not too high, not too low. They're not really arguing.
Keep it simple.
Right. Not arguing with umpires very often. I mean, the one break from that you saw in the World Series was Hunter Strickland when he lost it there in the World Series. But you get the feeling that somebody talked to him, because this year it's different with Hunter. And most of those pitchers who come up, they also seem calm, and the situation isn't too big for them.
somebody did talk to Hunter Strickland immediately after that game, and he stood at his locker and you know, faced the media. So after that conversation, so he was pulled aside and a conversation was had. And you have that in this organization, which I find refreshing as a mother of two, that, you know, these guys are still young. They're still young, and they're taken from their families early, and you need some parental guidance in there too. They, you know, at 22, 23, you know, the expectations we have of some of these kids, it's like telling kids who go to college, you better decide what it is you want to do when you're 18 years old and don't change that major. And, oh gosh, what happens if that's not what you want to do? I mean, it's so much pressure. So, it's very refreshing to see that they do have people, to go over what just happened and how can we make this right. And you need to stand up at your locker and talk about it and, face the music and move on. And I really respect that about working with this team. Is I can count on one hand the times a player has, you know, left the clubhouse in a huff or not stood at his locker. And the one that comes to mind, not in leaving, but that stood at his locker every single start, was Barry Zito. I mean, he set the tone. For as much criticism as Zito got for his actual performances, I thought he was a stellar example of a player doing the right thing and setting an example for his teammates that when you are not at your best, you can still stand here and help people get their work done. And people have jobs to do and they're going to write about it, but your behavior can completely guide where they go with it. And I loved that about Barry Zito. I've always respected that about him.
Yeah, I mean, the younger pitchers must have learned a lot from him. You know, you talk about age, and Madison Bumgarner just the other day turned 26. I mean, it's hard to believe for everything that he's gone through. He's only 26 years old. And for the most part, you just see, you know, all maturity there. I mean, nothing but. But there are times, and I know I talked to John Shea about this on this podcast about how, you know, he'll get upset at batters. You know, I understand if a batter hits a home run and he throws the bat and jogs really slow, you're going to get mad. But he got mad at a batter in Texas earlier this year who just got popped up and threw the bat, and he was mad about that. Yeah. So do you see him maybe getting away from that a little bit? You know, that's been a part of him on the mound. Is he maybe going to get away from that?
I think we've seen a lot of maturity from Madison. I can remember there was a video that was out when he was with San Jose, and I might be wrong on that, but he lost it on the mound. I mean, he just lost it. And so we haven't seen that Madison at this level. We've seen a fired up Madison. We've seen a Madison that clearly does not like bat flips or,
right. Delino DeShields was the Texas player, right?
Yeah. And, you know, here's my take on it. I can understand it, but I also believe that when a player goes yard and is admiring his hit, that it's understandable that the bat flips too. I mean, Barry Bonds did a pirouette, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
You have to accept it on both sides of the game. And the Giants are going to do it too. So I think that's where, you know, 24, 25, 26 years old starts to, you know, when he gets a little bit older, it won't bother him as much. There are going to be times where a player is trying to show him up, and at those times, then I understand getting upset. But a lot of times, and I'm, you know, I'm just so much older than all of them that I'm like, is that really that big of a deal? You know, but that's his take. He takes things like that personally. He doesn't like to feel shown up. At least that's my guess. I'm kind of talking around this here, but one very positive and calming influence is Buster Posey for him. That's why if Boach is able to have Buster always catch Madison, he does, because they have that relationship, true battery mates, and that Buster kind of, I think he knows when Madison's starting to, the triggers are starting to fire on him and what's bothering him. And obviously in huge matchups, like against the Dodgers, he's got his certain guys that just get under his skin, Puig and et cetera. And Buster knows this, you know, and he'll go out and just say whatever they say. But my guess is, you know, get a hold of yourself here. You got to make your pitches. But Part of it's kind of fun, though, too. I mean, you don't get much arguing anymore in baseball with, with the replay now. And so the last couple of games, you know, while it didn't go the Giants' way, I got to say, I got my money's worth watching Bosch go out there and just
right.
let winners have it. And the cap comes off and, you know, you don't get much of that anymore. And it's a human element to the game. And I love that part of baseball. I love to see the emotional roller coaster. And if that, you know, outburst is going to spark your team, or if the momentum's going to shift because of it. And sometimes it gets ridiculous, you know, Lou Piniella throwing the bases and stuff. That's just, you know, that's just a show at that point. But I think it's a great part of the game. And so I kind of like to see Madison get fired up a little bit. Certainly you see his teammates behind him, you know, get motivated by it too. But then, you know, there's a level where it's got to probably just, all right, that's enough.
Yeah.
But that's also me, you know. I'm always, see, here's my thing. So if the team runs out and, you know, the bench is clear, as the in-game reporter sitting in the dugout, do I need to go out as well and take on the other team's in-game reporter?
Maybe.
That's what I need to know.
I say
do
yes.
I got to go for the knees? Do I use my microphone? What do I have to do here?
Like Tanya Harding? Maybe.
Yeah, I could have somebody else do it, you know, and just do it for me. That could be a Tanya Harding way, yeah. But I just need to know my role. What is my role?
I think your role is enforcer. That's basically it. I mean, you got to take care of business.
Can you imagine?
If Alana Rizzo, you know, the Dodgers reporters out there, I say.
Oh, she's tough. Alana's tough. I know I have all the NL West gals by height, though. I've got them all by height. And we're actually all pretty good friends. We like each other a lot. But if I gotta go out there, you know, I gotta go.
We'll continue the conversation with Amy G after this. It was time for a new pair of snow skis, and I couldn't be happier with my decision to buy them at Demo Sport, where the experience was great. And I found out that they not only have skis, but they have snowboards and snow apparel. And for the summer, get ready with water skis, wakeboards, stand-up paddle boards, and all of your land sports needs like bikes and scooters, and can even get sunglasses there. Demo Sport, 1101 Francisco Boulevard in San Rafael. Call them at 415-454-3500. Demo Sport, committed to getting you the gear you need. Before we finish up here, tell us about how you got involved in this, because, I mean, it's got to be, you know, a great time in your career right now, following a team that's been winning the World Series at that ballpark, you know, the best ballpark really in the major leagues, just everything that's going on with it. How'd you get involved in it? And what do you foresee as the future of the role? Do you foresee doing anything differently as you go along?
Yeah, the role, the future of the role is always one of those questions I'm kind of thinking of, because it's definitely evolved since I started into a more popular role, that's for sure. I'm not sure how far you go with being an in-game reporter, but I don't really care right now, because it's just a lot of fun. And it's been a great fit for my life outside of my career. But the way I got into it, I was a longtime producer for Hard News, and then I went into sports and made the move to on camera involuntarily, because my boss lost somebody and needed me to fill in for some show that they were doing when we were still Fox Sports Net Bay Area.
Oh, okay.
And so that's how I got my face on camera. I was very happy with my face behind camera and just writing what all talent had to say. I enjoyed just putting it together, interviewing people. I love to interview people. I'm very curious. But anyway, I stepped in, and then that became, oh, look, you know, you can do a couple things here. And at that point in my career in television, you were more valuable if you could kind of be a jack of all trades, and you could edit, you could produce, you could write, you could report, go on camera. And so I went with it because I needed work. And I had my first child, and you know, I wasn't employed by anybody. I was a contractor. So I took anything and everything that came my way. I still have that mentality. You know, my husband's always like, you can say no. to some, you know, I'm like, no, better not. You never know when it's going to come again. But it makes me work hard. And so long story short, I was actually covering the A's for two seasons in a similar role, but they didn't have an in-game reporter. We had a pregame show, and I did features and reported in the pregame show. And then in 2008, when Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area took over and bought Fox, they moved me to the Giants, and I have been there ever since. And I can still remember my first game. I had my second child at that time, 5 weeks old, really no direction at all as to what I was doing. Just, oh, you're going to be on a couple times in the game and talk about stuff. And I'm like, oh, like what, you know? And so I quickly learned it would be stuff that I would be figuring out to talk about, and I needed to get my content, get my producer cap back on. But so from that game where I remember talking about Eugenio Velez,
right,
and Fred Lewis, don't call me Freddie.
Yeah, there's some names.
Yeah, and that's when I first met Rich Aurelia, and to today in my eighth season, we've got a real patterned role for me, and then that's branched out into other fun things that I can do, hosting things or emceeing things and doing fun. I just interviewed Buster at a high school rally on healthy eating habits. So being a mom has certainly played into my career as well, and different things that are important to me and things that I want my kids to hear about. And so it's, you know, it's been a great ride, you know, and I'm just kind of going with it and having fun and enjoying it. You never know when it ends, and so enjoy every moment.
One of the things that you're having fun with, it seems like, is catching Crook and Kipe in some uncompromising positions, maybe, just, you know, wearing sandals or whatever they're doing, you know, when they're not on camera. And this is, it's turned out to a pretty cool thing.
I haven't put out the pictures of uncompromising positions yet, actually. I've just put out shower sandals and picking of the nose. And I remember the sandal one. I took their picture wearing those crazy World Series ring hats. I don't know if you've seen their picture.
Oh, yeah.
They're World Series rings they wear on top of their head, and somebody made them. They're amazing and great craftsmanship. And so I took their picture, and they saw me take the picture. And then I looked down at Dwayne's feet, and I was like, what is going on here? Like, where are your shoes? You know? And, you know, I don't want to get my shoes smelly. So I'm wearing these right now. I'm like, you know, in my mind, the mother in me is like, socks? Have we heard of this new invention called socks that helps with shoe stink? But, so I took that picture, and I just put up the ring picture. And so I always ask them, I always ask if they mind if I put up the photo, and I didn't ask Dwayne if he minded if I put up this photo, and then it blew up. And so the next day he was like, huh, yeah, you think maybe you should ask, you know, about putting this photo up? And I'm like, are you upset? Yeah. I was actually really concerned that he was upset that I put this up. And then he just laughed at me like, you know, Dwayne, it's pretty hard to get him upset. And so then he knew I was concerned. So he jumped on that. And then in the entire broadcast, every time I came on, he's like, well, you better be careful because Amy might take a picture of that. And, you know, it became like they're going to Vegas and going to bring their Speedos because I might, you know, take a picture of it. You know, I'm like, oh, my God, this is just getting out of control.
Yeah.
But they are, you know, Mike and Dwayne are very dear to me and have given me support early on in my career, all throughout my career, but early on in my career when I was really struggling with it, whether or not I wanted to do this, and they stood there by me and helped me through it. And I love them, and they are extremely fun to work with, and what people imagine them to be like, they really are. And they really are best friends, and they love this game, and they love their Giants. And I'm just really fortunate to be able to be on the broadcast with them. It just wouldn't be the same without them. They're amazing.
It's a lot of fun to watch. It's a great team. One last thing I do want to get out. You and I talked about your book a couple of years ago on Comcast when we had San Jose Giants game.
Yeah,
I want to throw that out there again. You authored the book Smarty Marty's Got Game. Tell us about the book and how it's done and how people can get a hold of that.
Yeah, well, I have Smarty Marty's Gut Game has gone on to become a little local bestseller. So thank you for your help when, a couple years ago in plugging it. It's a story about an older sister teaching her younger brother who doesn't like baseball. He thinks it's boring. And she teaches him to love the game through scoring the game. And it's all about learning how to score baseball. And so then this summer, I just came out with a scorebook, an actual scorebook, and it's Smarty Marty's official scorebook. So now you can get the book and read the story and then grab a scorebook and take it to the game start scoring some games. And it's just been extremely fun. I've done countless school visits and bring kids up to score. And, it, you know, it's very interactive and beyond just, you know, whether it just kind of gets everybody involved in talking, whether a child plays baseball or not, or they're coordinated or they're not, everyone can score a game. And it's simple enough that I learned how to do it at four. So it's, you know, it's really age appropriate for all ages. And it just makes you interact and makes it a level playing field when you want to talk about baseball. So I hope people will go out and get it and enjoy it and have fun and talk, put the phones down and talk, and whether it's about baseball or your day at school or your day at work, it might spark some conversation in our lives. I think much needed in our lives right now.
Yeah, that's a great accomplishment to have that book out. Amy, thanks so much for the time. You're doing a great job on Comcast and the Giants games, and look forward to seeing you at the next homestand after this road trip.
Thank you, Joe. Take care.
That's Amy Gutierrez, Amy G, Giants reporter for Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area. Join us again on Monday, Labor Day. The Giants are in Arizona taking on the Diamondbacks, and John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle will be there, our regular guest, and we'll chat with John. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.